Welcome to KDNK's weekly newsreel, a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. Subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip about something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. The weekly newsreel is underwritten by R.J. Paddywhack's Pet Outfitters next to City Market in El Jebel. Open 7 days a week. More info at 970-963-1700 or rjpaddywhacks.com. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. First, a few of the week's headlines from around the region. 50-year-old Silt resident Robert Baumwall was killed after being hit by a car Wednesday morning on Highway 6. The Post-Independent reported that Rifle police are investigating the case and looking for witnesses to the crash. The driver, as yet unidentified, has been charged with driving under the influence. In Glenwood Springs, an Arizona developer may purchase the mostly empty Glenwood Springs Mall, but must first finalize a lease with anchor store Ross. Mountain lion hunting will expand to a new game management unit near Aspen in November, reports Aspen Journalism. Governor Jared Polis officially welcomed to the state a wolf pack spotted in northeastern Colorado. The wolf welcome comes just after a ballot initiative asking voters if Canis lupus should be reintroduced to Colorado got the green light from the state. Colorado Politics reported that 84% of participants in a Colorado State University survey support reintroduction. And the proposed Jordan Cove liquefied natural gas export terminal and pipeline in Oregon took 2 steps forward and 1 step back this month. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that the Coos Bay City Council approved the project's local land use application. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration also issued its final opinion, stating that the project will not jeopardize species or adversely modify critical habitat. But, according to Willamette Week, the state denied an extension request for a permit related to river and wetlands crossings and dredging in Coos Bay. More on Jordan Cove next week during KDNK local and regional news. You're listening to KDNK's weekly newsreel, a news magazine that takes a look at the week's top local and regional stories aired on KDNK between Monday and Friday. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. Change seems to be the theme of this week's news. Scott Franz, who usually reports for the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Network from the state capitol, takes a look at how small rural towns in Colorado will survive the end of King Coal. 250 people braved a wintry Saturday morning in Glenwood Springs to march for all kinds of change. The National Environmental Protection Act, or NEPA, a foundational environmental law, is threatened by a proposed Trump administration overhaul that could set environmental protections back 50 years. And Garfield County resident Katrina Byers says it's time for a change in the makeup of the county board of commissioners. She's thrown her hat in the ring to challenge Republican incumbent John Martin. Let's start with Scott Franz and his story about how Hayden, Colorado, plans to cope with the closure of 2 nearby coal mines and a coal-fired power plant.
It's a good day when Tammy Delaney hears a train rumbling down the tracks outside of the century-old granary building she owns in Hayden.
Hey, you even got the train noise today.
Delaney is a leader in the local business community. In that train, it's carrying a load of coal from the nearby 20-mile coal mine. But as the industry in Rout County declines, so too are the trains.
When we purchased the granary over 10 years ago, there were probably 4 or 5 trains of coal heading through every day. So it was a continual use of that line. And many in the coal industry would say, every time you see a train pass through, the tax dollars that are being carried on those trains is immense. And, you know, the sale value of that is immense. We don't see that anymore. We see maybe 1 train every 3 weeks.
The mine is producing about half as much as it did 2 decades ago, and the local coal-fired power plant, Hayden Station, is expected to start shutting down in the next 10 years.
If there is not a smooth transition, that's going to be a profound impact.
Inside the granary building is a cozy coffee shop. You can usually find elected officials here and town manager Matthew Mendisco. We strike up a conversation next to an old wood-burning stove.
I have three neighbors just in my neighborhood, on my street, that work at either 20 Mile or Hayden Station. That's just on my street. It's extremely important to our economy. But Hayden has no delusions or no misunderstandings that we're going to have control over what that industry does in the future.
Still, Mendisco, who is in his 30s, is ambitious about the future. He points to a 2017 tax hike approved by voters to pay for roads and infrastructure. There's a new $41 million school under construction and a growing regional airport that welcomes skiers to Steamboat Springs. But
there will be people who will lose their jobs. There may be people who will decide that they can find another job in another area. That would be unfortunate, because we love everybody here. But all we can do is continue forward, and we will. I mean, I have no doubt. And the people here will be the reason that that happens.
And that includes Brian Hoza. He's led the local school board for two decades. Sitting at his dining room table, we talked about how the decline of the coal industry is impacting this town of about 2,000.
You know, there's a lot of the old timers that just wonder where things are going to go, you know, kind of sustain their old future, but they're worried about their next generations.
So what can be done to keep the economy vibrant after the loss of coal? It depends on who you ask. As one of the old timers, Hoza feels town leaders should be marketing the area more to lure in the next big thing.
We have to get the word out to the right companies, the right industries, the right economic endeavors, so they understand that this is an option here.
But he has no specific ideas. Back at the granary building, Tammy Delaney thinks they should play up their agricultural roots and do more events to capitalize on the resources Hayden already has.
We used to have the vintage auto races in Steamboat. It's outgrown itself. They basically had no room to have those races anymore. We have some cool places out here that we could host a vintage auto race.
Retraining coal workers is an option that often comes up in conversation around that wood-burning stove, but it's not one that sits well with town manager Matthew Mendisco.
Let me just be frank, because that's the way we do it in Hayden. Saying you're going to retrain a 45 to 50-year-old, completely brand new, is stupid. It's lip service.
Mendisco is pushing for a new hotel and finding a replacement for one of the two local restaurants in town that just closed. He's also looking to his hometown of Naderita, another small coal town in southwestern Colorado, for guidance. They lost their coal mine and power plant.
What I've learned is that you have to plan for the future. And what I mean by plan for the future is you can't be stuck in one mode of how you do things.
In our next story, we'll visit Naderita to see how they are rebuilding following the loss of their coal jobs. I'm Scott Franz in Hayden, Colorado.
Tell me what democracy looks like!
This is what democracy looks like!
Tell me what democracy
250 people exercised their free speech rights in Glenwood Springs for the 2020 Women's March. Here's more.
I want to hear you say,
I'm the change!
Rifle resident Leslie Robinson of the Grand Valley Citizens Alliance, a local oil and gas watchdog group, was one of several speakers at Saturday's rally.
The environment is on fire, and we have politicians in Washington, D.C. lying, cutting benefits, ignoring our climate crisis, and who are trying to make women second-class citizens. We have local politicians who are deaf to our issues. Let's rise and roar. I'm inviting you to run for political office in 2020 because it's time for us ladies to govern in our town, in our county, and in our country. But first, I want to hear you say,
I'm the change! I'm the change! I'm the change!
Thank you!
Other speakers included Sarah Rankin Gordon of the Glenwood Springs Citizens Alliance, which is fighting the proposed limestone quarry expansion north of town, James Yachino, a Democrat hoping to unseat Congressman Scott Tipton of the 3rd Congressional District, Michelle Ferrigno-Warren challenging U.S. Senator Cory Gardner, and Jasmine Ramirez-Ramos, chair of the all-women Roaring Fork School Board.
Make us fierce! Burn a flame in our being to fight for our children and our future. We declare that this is a move in our country. May the marches of women across the nation and the world light up like a wildfire of change. May women across the country be convicted to rise and transform their community. May they be given supernatural courage to alter the face of this nation. May they become beacons of light in their spaces. May they be contagious. May they revive, advance, diversify, modify, innovate, transform, evolve, resolve, reform, transform, and revolutionize wherever they
are. Ferrigno Warren from Denver said that out of all the women's marches on Saturday, she chose Glenwood Springs to march with Ramirez Ramos, who was the first woman of color to be elected to the Roaring Fork School Board.
I met her several months ago on the campaign trail and wanted to lend my support. It's a really important time with the centennial year of women's suffrage. That's where we are right now. And then also, we've never had a woman senator in Colorado, and so I'm one of the women candidates trying to ensure that when we celebrate the 100-year anniversary in August 2020 of women's suffrage, we have a woman on the ticket. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Marchers left Glenwood Centennial Park, chanting down Grand Avenue and along the pedestrian bridge, vowing to vote in the next election and getting more involved in local issues.
Rachel.
Where do you live?
In Rifle. I want to continue doing what I'm doing, which is showing up to events when I can, making it very known to the people that I surround myself with where I stand on these issues, and just continuing to try and get people out to vote for candidates that are going to represent the interests of women and traditionally oppressed populations.
Were you at the 2017 march?
I was.
Okay, where?
I was in D.C. and for the first march. I mean, D.C. is just a totally different experience. I think people were really ignited by the recent election, and a lot of people have just separated themselves from that because it's been really painful to watch this current administration as it continues, and it's really hard to invest yourself in it because you just get hurt over and over again. That being said, we've got a really important election coming up this year, and I think now is the time to get excited again.
For KDNK News, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh in Glenwood Springs. You're listening to KDNK's weekly newsreel, highlighting regional and local stories aired on KDNK between January 20th and January 24th, with in-kind support from Rifle Community TV, providing local information and non-commercial programming, including coverage of Rifle City Council, the RE2 School Board, Energy Advisory Board, Northwest Colorado Oil and Gas Forum, and more. Rifle TV is at riflenow.org. I'm your host, Amy Haddon Marsh, and I found a theme of sorts running through this week's local and regional news: change in politics, policy, leadership, and lifestyle. This week, the Trump administration celebrated the 50th anniversary of the National Environmental Protection Act, or NEPA, by proposing significant changes. Environmental, conservation, and public policy groups are stunned by the depth and breadth of the overhaul. Here's the first part of an interview about the act with Jason O'Neill, Deputy Director of Western Values Project, a public lands watchdog group based in Montana. The National Environmental Protection Act, or NEPA, was enacted almost exactly 50 years ago, and it's considered by many to be the nation's bedrock environmental law. Can you give us a little history, talk about what inspired NEPA?
This was really the first major environmental protection law passed in America. Congress passed it in 1969, and it was signed into law by President Nixon in 1970, so here we are 50 years later. But, you know, this came about at a time in America when we were going under massive expansion of industrial development, and, you know, in really response to the probably one of the most striking events back in 1969, which was the Cuyahoga River fire in Ohio, where literally we had so much pollution in this river that it actually caught fire. And with the passing of this was overseeing the implementation in the way Congress passed the law was that rested in what is called the Council on Environmental Quality, which is housed in the White House.
Why is NEPA considered the bedrock environmental law?
Well, this essentially said that instead of allowing projects to go forward in, you know, a haphazard way that there wasn't a lot of information about, and really when we had these major projects in industrial extractive development, what we had to consider. So we had to then permit a project. What we had to do was actually look at the impacts of that project. So what was that project's impact on our air quality, on our lands, on our clean water, and how those affected not only our environment and impacted wildlife, but also communities and really human health.
So fast forward to 2020, the Trump administration has proposed an overhaul of the National Environmental Protection Act that could send, it seems like it could send the nation back to the 1960s in terms of environmental protection. Can you talk about the most significant changes that have been proposed?
Well, the acronym is NEPA, but maybe now under the Trump administration, it actually stands for No Environmental Protections Anymore. Because really what we've seen under this administration is an unprecedented corporate capture unseen arguably in American history. So, yes, we're dialing back the clock. We're not maintaining even status quo. We're actually going backwards when it comes to protecting clean air, clean water, our environment, and our land. So there is no good for the American public in what Trump is proposing. So we'll hit the bad and the ugly. So first, probably most timely and most important is that the federal government will no longer be responsible for analyzing the cumulative impacts or effects. So what that means for folks is there's no requirement to look at how pollution over time would affect public health and the environment. So we all know that pollution accumulates, that long-term, you know, soot and pollution discharge bioaccumulates, and that has an impact on our environment. But now we say, well, we don't even have to look at that. And it also means, quite frankly, that we're just going to put our heads in the sand, and the Trump administration is known for doing this time and time again when it comes to climate emissions and global warming, probably the largest crisis facing the planet and America in history. So again, what we're doing is saying that, you know, corporations rule the day and we don't have to look at those cumulative impacts. Next is they're going to be ignoring indirect effects. So sticking with the Trump administration theme, they said, well, we don't have to look at these things. So if all of a sudden your upstream neighbor happens to be a coal mine or an oil development or some other mineral extraction, we don't have to look at what flows downstream. So we all know what flows downstream, and unfortunately now for communities and the public, there isn't going to be a way to look at how those indirect impacts, or we're no longer going to examine those when we talk about major development. Probably another one of the more insidious recommendations is now corporations will be able to gather their own data on NEPA review. So, you know, what could possibly go wrong with that? I don't know, maybe a river catches on fire again, but basically, this means that corporations can hand out and put forward their own data for NEPA analysis, and ultimately, it's going to be us paying the cost of erroneous or poor data that they put forward to advance their own special interests. And probably the worst for the public and communities is that there is confusing language about whether we can actually comment and how we comment on projects that are under NEPA view. So every NEPA-reviewed project has at least a provision to have a window in which people, communities impacted, can comment on what this analysis was. It's essentially, at any time, somebody can define that definition of a comment that needs to be specific or timely any way they interpret. So if a comment they don't find is specific actually to the project, that comment, whether it's voicing concern or not, can be withdrawn from the record and not considered when they permit a major project.
Jason O'Neill is the deputy director of Western Values Project. You can find the entire interview at kdnk.org. In fact, you can find all these stories and more at our website. Again, that's kdnk.org. You can also subscribe to our weekly newsreel podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip about something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. Next up, former Carbondale Town Trustee Katrina Byers wants a change in leadership in Garfield County. She plans to unseat incumbent Republican Garfield County Commissioner John Martin in November. Here's a story from KDNK's Lucas Turner about Byers' election bid.
During Garfield County Democrats' annual dinner honoring Martin Luther King, Katrina Byers of Glenwood Springs announced her bid for county commissioner, challenging Chairman John Martin.
With the support of the Garfield County Democratic Party, to ask for your support in the upcoming race of Garfield County Commissioner.
Katrina Byers was born and raised in Garfield County, eventually attending Colorado Mountain College, where she earned a bachelor's degree in sustainability studies. She then went on to get a master's degree in legal studies at the Sturm College of Law at Denver University. She says it's time for Garfield County Commissioner John Martin to step down.
The incumbent, as you know, is a seated Republican who is coming up on a quarter century of service. I appreciate the time that he's given to our county, and I think it's time for a change of the guard.
Byers' governmental experience includes a brief stint on the Carbondale Board of Trustees from 2014 to 2017. During that time, she authored a source water protection plan for the town of Carbondale and served on a committee that wrote the Garfield County Clean Energy Action Plan. During her speech Saturday, Katrina Byers spoke about a range of issues, but focused primarily on environmental sustainability.
In Garfield County, we have 15,000 oil and gas wells. We have 18 deep injection wells that over the life of the well take 800 million gallons of water each. The way that we are using our resources in our county is not only degrading our environment, but it is having an effect on human health. If we're going to continue to use our resources, we need to do it responsibly.
Katrina Byers registered as a Democrat just a few months ago. Before that, she was unaffiliated. She says she felt disillusioned by the way both major political parties operate. Now that she's running as a Democrat, she says she's calling for the party to, quote, self-purify and lead a new ethical standard for the country. She also says the party needs to reach more unaffiliated voters and spoke against partisanship before wrapping up her announcement.
I'm not here to criticize the other side. I'm here to move forward, and I'm here to unite the people of this county and moving forward. And as soon as we start to have sustainable models of local economic diversity, renewable energy, adequate education, equal access to medicine, as soon as we do that here, we have a model that can be used in other places. There is no excuse not to do better, and I hope for your support this November. Tell your friends.
KDNK News, I'm Lucas Turner.
And finally, a new bus service connecting Parachute to Rifle Embattlement Mesa means changes in transportation are in store for Western Garfield County. Here's more.
Parachute Town Manager Stuart MacArthur has been leading the effort to create the new bus service. During Monday's commissioner meeting for Garfield County, MacArthur explained the logistics involved with such a project, including subjects like bus acquisition, developing schedules and routes, and consolidating support from community partners like Roaring Fork Transportation Authority, Colorado Mountain College, the City of Rifle, and others. Under the current proposal, service would operate 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. Potential bus stop locations in the Parachute area include Willow Park Apartments and the old come-and-go site, and a park-and-ride at Cotton View Apartments. In Rifle, proposed locations are Walmart, CMC, Grand River Hospital, Garfield County Administration Buildings, and the Rifle Park-and-Ride. MacArthur says service could begin as early as June.
That coincides with two things. One, school's over, so school bus drivers might be available to work, and also that is that notes the end of the RAFTA's winter season.
Garfield County Commissioner John Martin notes the timing would also overlap with the end of Colorado Mountain Express busy winter schedule, and Commissioner Tom Jankowski says that a decrease in oil and gas development could also free up certified drivers. Representatives from the Roaring Fork Transportation Authority also attended the meeting. Parachute Town Manager Stuart MacArthur says RAFTA has also expressed concerns about the availability of qualified CDL drivers. Still, RAFTA has been providing support in the development of routes, schedules, and fee structures, along with driver training, and agreeing to assist with dispatch in the evenings once the service gets up and running. Also in attendance was Tinker Duclo, Dean of Colorado Mountain College's Rifle Campus. Commissioners asked Duclo to clarify the college's support for the project. She says the decision would have to be approved by the board, but could not offer a timeline on when they might make a decision. Duclo asked commissioners whether the successful implementation of the project could eventually lead to a ballot initiative for Rifle and Parachute to join RAFTA. Commissioner Jankowski says that isn't likely given the nature of RAFTA's funding model.
It's more than just a sales tax at this point. It's also a property tax. And so, I mean, that's a dual tax question that I think we might have better luck to go out with an independent transportation area that goes from Silt to Parachute and unincorporated Garfield County. You know, that's definitely a ways away.
Jankowski also says that if CMC's board is not interested in supporting the project, he would recommend shortening the route to stop before the Rifle Campus and have routes end at 8 p.m. instead of 9. Parachute Town Manager Stuart MacArthur says the City of Rifle is supporting the initiative by performing traffic studies around proposed bus stop locations. Grand River Hospital was also approached for support, but MacArthur says they didn't respond favorably. Lastly, MacArthur says he is trying to secure funding from Walmart and City Market in exchange for bus advertising. Just before voting to approve the grant, Commissioner Mike Sampson made final comments in support of the project.
It's good to see parties working together. Rifle, hopefully CMC. I feel very favorable. I feel positive about that. And I think we can hopefully draw in some other partners to make this a reality because it's a definite need.
You can find more specifics of the proposed bus service at garfield-county.com. KDNK News, I'm Lucas Turner.
You can find all of these stories and more at kdnk.org. That's it for this week's newsreel. KDNK's weekly news review of the week's top local and regional news stories aired on KDNK between Monday, January 20th and Friday, January 24th. You can subscribe to our podcast and give us a review on iTunes. If you have a tip about something you'd like the KDNK news team to cover, send it to news@kdnk.org. All submissions are confidential. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh. Thanks for listening and have a great week.